Gene Pasale, and this is Living History. This show explores the rich heritage of the Brandywine Valley outside Philadelphia, focusing on the people, places, and events over more than 300 years which have played an important part in our American heritage. Each show highlights a local town, event, or personality who's had a notable influence on our culture. And before we get started, I want to mention that our call-in line, if you have questions or comments, is 610-701-9243. That's 610-701-9243. This day in history, December 28th. In 1832, John Calhoun becomes the first sitting vice president to resign the office. Twice elected VP, first under President John Quincy Adams and later with Andrew Jackson, Calhoun took a vacant Senate seat open in South Carolina. He would go on to become one of the most powerful orators and politicians of the early to mid-19th century, a staunch defender of slavery and states' rights. In 1895, the first commercial movie is screened at the Grand Café in Paris. Two French brothers, Louis and Auguste Lumière, developed a camera projector called the cinematograph, which revolutionized the world of photography by making single images come alive and appear to move before your eyes. In the following decades, Thomas Edison and others would develop related devices which created an entirely new industry, filmmaking. And in 1908, the worst earthquake in European history hits the Straits of Messina near southern Italy, devastating much of Sicily and nearby regions with a 7.5 magnitude trembler. The massive quake caused a 40-foot-high tsunami and killed roughly 100,000 people in a region dubbed the Dancing Land due to its history of earthquakes. America has thousands of museums offering an enormous diversity of things to see: art, technology, history, and numerous other subjects. Yet only a handful of those museums offer their visitors the feel of being right there in an artist's studio, where creations came to life. The Wharton Escherich Museum in Malvern, Pennsylvania, is one of those museums. Sculptor Wharton Escherich lived from 1887 to 1970, focusing his talents on wood carvings, including bowls, utensils, furniture, interior items, and even buildings. His home is now a National Historic Landmark, a site where thousands of people come to see more than 300 pieces of his unique art and style, showcased in a rustic structure on a hilltop not far from Philadelphia. Laura Hemer is the curator and program director at the museum. Julie Ganaway is their executive director. They take visitors on tours through Escherich's fascinating home and studio, bringing guests on a personal walk through the artist's life and work. The museum is quite unique and will be of interest to anyone looking for something just a bit different from the standard museum format. Laura and Julie are here with us today to discuss the many things to see at the museum and how visitors can benefit from a visit there. Laura and Julie, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thanks.
I don't know much about the Wharton Escherich, but I've seen pictures, and I definitely will visit there someday. When was it started, and just tell us a little bit about its history.
Sure. So Escherich, as you just mentioned, passed away in 1970 at the age of 83. But as early as 1966, he began conversations with his family, including his life partner, Miriam Phillips, who lived here with him in the studio, and his children, about what would happen to this place in the collections when he had passed on. Everyone recognized that something important had happened here, and they also, thankfully, all agreed that it should be shared with the public. So the son-in-law and daughter, Ruth was Wharton's middle child, and her husband, Bob Bascom, was the son-in-law, purchased the property, in essence, from Escherich. And when he passed away in 1970, they began almost immediately the process of turning it into a museum. It was incorporated and first opened its doors to the public in September of 1972, and we've been in operation welcoming visitors ever since. We see about 5,000 people annually now.
Oh, that's interesting. Now, so I guess some of his family were actually the driving forces behind starting the museum. Is that correct?
Very, very much so.
Yeah, they were. Collectively, all of his children, and as Julie mentioned, Miriam, Wharton's partner,
they all recognized that this place was something special, that it needed to be open to the public, and they were the ones that did all the groundwork to get it running, to open the doors, and make it an official nonprofit and a small museum on the hillside here.
Mm-hmm. What is the mission of the museum? What do you hope to bring to the community, to bring to the public?
Pretty simple. Our mission currently is to preserve, maintain, and exhibit Escherich's creations. We want to do that to educate, inspire the public. It's a little more nuanced than that in practice. I mean, I think what we really are trying to do is show people who visit here that you can live a life of creativity in everyday objects, and you can be inspired by a place like this, whether you go off and make something or whether you don't. But on paper, our mission is certainly preservation. This is a hand-built structure, and therefore it is quirky. aspects of it date back to 1926. Mm-hmm. The more recent aspects date to 1966. So it's still, you know, it's an older building, and it needs care and love, again, especially because of the hand-built aspect of it. So preservation is a key component of what we do here.
Interesting. Now, did Escherich actually build the house and studio himself, or did he have some help?
He did. He designed what is now the museum, the studio, in his head, and hired a local stonemason to help him actually construct the building. When Wharton first came out here, you know, he was from Philadelphia. He was not a country boy. He did not have those skills to just start building. But he wanted to learn. So he worked right alongside Albert Culp, who was his stonemason, and they constructed this building first in 1926, and then Wharton added additions himself in 1940 and then again in 1966 to get the museum how it is today.
Mm-hmm. Now, I assume that the focus is almost entirely on his work. Are there any works of art from any other artists there?
We have a few pieces in our collection from other artists that were friends of Wharton's that he had in his personal collection. Mm-hmm. But that would make up maybe 1% of what we have here. Mm-hmm. 99% of what we have here was made or owned by Escherich in his lifetime.
Okay, I do know that he was a sculptor and worked on a variety of different pieces. What is your focus there? I know he did a lot of wood carvings. Tell us a little bit about the actual items that people can see there.
Sure. So, yes, Wharton was a pioneer in the studio furniture movement, which basically was this idea that furniture could also be sculpture, that art and furniture were interchangeable. And so what we have here is the result of Wharton's idea about that. So when people come here, they see his sculptural furniture in every nook and cranny of this building. We've got large wooden sculptures that range from, you know, 8 to 10 feet high to small desktop sculptures he did, of course, out of wood that are only, you know, 8 inches high. Mm-hmm. But then he also did all of the interiors himself. He liked to call it sculpted interiors. So everything is built in. It flows beautifully. We've got an incredible spiral staircase that always steals the show here, that Wharton did in 1930, and visitors still get to walk up and down it today.
Oh, I'd love to see that.
It's gorgeous.
Yeah. Now, did he have formal art training or sculpture training?
He actually was formally trained as a painter. Escherich came, his father worked in business, and to Escherich this was a monolithic idea that did not appeal to him. He knew from a very early age that he wanted to be an artist. He carried a sketch pad everywhere he went with him. Mm-hmm. He persuaded his parents to send him to the Manual Training High School in Philadelphia, which offered some art and even vocational instruction. And from there, he went to what is now the University of the Arts. It was then called the Philadelphia Industrial Museum School. Mm-hmm. And he was studying painting. And he even received a scholarship to attend PAFA, Pennsylvania Academy of Fine Arts. Mm. We have a number of his paintings here, some of which are on display. Mm. And we are hoping to do some conservation work on the others and share those more and more with the public because his paintings are really rather beautiful. Mm-hmm. But they're also, they get a little lost in what was happening in American art in the day, American Impressionism. Do you look at them and they're sort of indicative of what a lot of other artists were doing. However, with Escherich's sculpture, you can look at a piece or his furniture and say, oh, that's an Escherich.
Very unique. Now, did he have any colleagues that are notable in the art world? I mean, do you know any famous sculptors, artists, painters, what have you?
Escherich is often grouped with George Nakashima. That's primarily because of an affinity with amongst woodworkers for these two artists.
Mm.
We know that the George Nakashima Studio, of course, is in Bucks County, Pennsylvania, and we do partner with them on various things, and we know them. George has passed on, but his daughter continues the legacy. Nakashima was more of a production studio furniture maker, many more pieces. They did cross paths at one point. I don't know that we could consider them friends, but they did know one another.
Mm-hmm. Now, how would you describe his style? What is the best adjective or suite of words that would describe what people can see in his work?
One of my favorite ways people describe his work is as whimsical. It's very fun and playful. What was great about Wharton is he did not take himself or life too seriously. And his motto was, if it's not fun, it's not worth doing.
Mm-hmm.
And that definitely comes across in his work, and the style that he's best known for is just fun.
Yeah, quite a lot of humor here.
Sounds reasonable. I have 1 minute before we take a break, but I just wanted to ask, what are the first things that visitors see when they walk through the door there? Then we'll take a commercial break.
I'd back it up a little, Gene, and say as you come down off of the parking trail, you start to understand what you're in for.
Mm.
Buildings themselves, the shape of the buildings is like no other you've ever seen because of the hand-built nature and because of Escherich's creative vision. So really, I think it begins with, as you come up the trail and you look to your right, you say, wow, what is that?
Mm.
And people sometimes do that and stop in to find out what that is.
Excellent. You know, I posted a few photos of the museum on my Facebook page today, and I have to admit, I asked for a friend request from both of you, but I mentioned the Wharton Escherich Museum, and it's a very interesting-looking sculpture and structure, I should say. But we are going to take a very brief break, but stay with us, and we will be back with Laura Hemer and Julie Ganaway of the Wharton Escherich Museum.
Do you have a wedding, graduation, baptism, confirmation, milestone, or birthday to plan? You need John Surratt Catering, one of the most highly rated and preferred caterers throughout the Philadelphia area. They will be there to create and cater your event while assisting as much or as little as you desire. Planning a decadent, over-the-top company gala? Need help transforming your backyard into the party of the year? Want to wow your clients with a delicious luncheon? Then you need John Surratt Catering. All you have to do is call, and they'll handle the rest. Located at 835 Lincoln Avenue in Westchester, visit them at SurrockCatering.com or call 610-640-2836. That's 610-640-2836.
If you had to choose a roofer, would you choose one with limited experience and knowledge, or would you choose a roofer certified as a master elite contractor by the largest manufacturer in the nation, GAF, a distinction shared by only 3% of the nation's roofers? I'm talking about GP Martini Roofing, who also does siding, windows, doors, and offers an ironclad guarantee that he'll repair or replace any roof for defects within its normal life. GP Martini services Chester, Delaware, Bucks, and Montgomery counties with free estimates and consultation, and does both commercial and residential. Go to their website at martiniroofing.com for special savings, or call 610-873-1696. And also, financing is available with no payments for a full year. Now, what roofer would you call? GP Martini is the answer, 610-873-1696.
The names you want to hear from?
Chester County District Attorney Tom Hogan joins us.
The stories you care about.
The investigation focused on former Superintendent Richard Como.
This is the talk of Chester County, 1520 WCHE.
I I'm Gene Pasale, and this is Living History. Today we're speaking with Laura Hemer and Julie Ganaway of the Wharton Escherich Museum in Malvern, Pennsylvania. Julie and Laura, I understand that the building itself kind of looks like a museum in a very unique way. So how would you describe the structure? I know whimsical is one of those things, but it almost looks like something you might see from The Hobbit, I think.
We often use that word, particularly when we describe our offices, which are in fact inside the building. When you look at it from the front, there's three distinct sections, and I think the easiest way to sort of sketch a picture of it is to describe them. The oldest section was during Escherich's. He was heavily influenced at the time with the arts and crafts and organic movements. He took a lot of cues from all the Pennsylvania bank barns that were everywhere at the time. Mm-hmm. So that part of the structure is primarily built of stone. It flares down at the bottom like a tree trunk might, and has a roof line that sags a little. It's not, he didn't particularly care for straight lines.
Mm-hmm.
And took a lot of cues from Rudolf Steiner, the philosopher who said there are no right angles in nature.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a wood addition that comes onto the building in 1940, and here we see he had a brief but prolific period of expressionism. He had traveled to Germany and was heavily influenced by that. So the wooden addition is characterized by prismatic lines, and it's very angular. It appears quite small from the front, but when you walk around the back, you get a sense of the scale. And then finally, the silo comes on in 1966. And it's painted. It has a fresco that reflects an autumnal day up here on the mountain with the typical fall colors of the trees, and it's really quite beautiful. Escherich called it his castle on a hill, but I think it looks, the effect is a little bit more like if a hobbit had a barn.
Oh, interesting. Now, for our listeners who are not far from the Malvern area, you mentioned to me offline that you're not too far off of Lancaster Avenue, Route 30, is that correct?
Yeah, we are about 3 miles north of the Paoli train station.
Okay, so very, very accessible for a lot of people on the main line. I know you have literally hundreds of items there. Tell us about the suite of different things that you have, bowls, carvings, furniture. To describe each set of things you have and what the most interesting aspects are.
So when the museum opened, the thing to remember when you're here is not only that everything is hand-built by Escherich, the switch plates, the light poles, the toilet. It's also, this was his home. Where his life played out. He had his conversations here and his fights and his naps and his meals. And so when the museum opened its doors, it was a real pioneer in the visitor experience of opening a historic house museum without display cases, without text panels. This is not a visitor-directed experience because you are in this man's home. In fact, we're part of something called the Historic Artists Homes and Studio Program. It's a national trust program, a network of independent museums across the country, 30-some, Laura, that are, some are hand-built, some are not, but they are all homes and studios of American artists. So together they interpret America's collective past. And what we wanted to do here was to present this place so that you really, there is an indelible creativity. Escherich's spirit lives on here. This wasn't just where his work was made, but where the creative process was nurtured. He went through different evolutions in medium and styles, and then the personal aspect. So really it's hard to describe what it's like other than to say that this is, you come into the man's home, and everything he made was functional art. So all of his homewares, where if you go into my kitchen, my utensils are pretty boring. I probably got them at Bed Bath & Beyond. But Escherich made them, and everything he owned was a work of art. So it's this really fantastical mix of comfort, familiarity, and surprise and delight.
That's fascinating. It's evident that the home is really part of him. And vice versa. He was part of the home.
Absolutely. And you really pick up on who. In fact, Escherich liked to say that he wasn't fond of biographies or talking about his work or writing about his work. He said, if you want to know who I am, come to my studio, see my work.
Mm-hmm. Now, did he have exhibitions of any of his works around the Philadelphia area, or did he sell many works in his lifetime?
He did. Quite extensively in Philadelphia and also actually up into New York and I believe in his lifetime, even down into Washington, D.C. He showed his pieces in a lot of the galleries, of course, hoping to sell them. But the Museum of Contemporary Craft up in New York did a major retrospective on him during his lifetime. And they actually, you know, borrowed pieces from Wharton here at the studio, but also contacted several of his patrons and asked to borrow works from them so that they could exhibit him. So he was known pretty wide and far during his lifetime.
Interesting. How large is the museum?
We are not very large. Square footage, we're about 2,300 square feet, and we sit on about 12 acres of land, although majority of that is wooded. But there are five buildings on our museum campus, but three of those are currently open to the public, which is, of course, the studio, Wharton's Garage, which is now our visitor center, which, of course, is another creative, hand-built structure. And Wharton's woodshed is also still on site, full of different woods that he may have eventually used in something if he hadn't passed in 1970.
Do you have the last items or works of art that he was working on when he passed away?
We have a couple pieces dated to 1970. Thankfully, Wharton carved the year of everything he made into the piece itself. So we do have a handful of objects we know he did in 1970. And we have a couple unfinished pieces that we're not sure when he was working on them, but he never picked them up again.
How many visitors do you get there typically each month?
Each month we range between about 400 and 500 people. So overall each year we usually get close to about 5,000 annually.
And when you hear comments from your visitors, what are the kinds of comments you get?
We hear the word wow a lot.
Wow.
Wow. Yep. A lot of it is people just being speechless, and they actually can't voice what they're thinking or what they're feeling when they walk through the door. I know myself and a lot of our volunteers enjoy just watching the look on people's faces as they experience Escherich Studio for the first time. It's usually sheer delight.
Very interesting. You know, it kind of reminds me of, in a way, even though I've never actually been there myself, but I've been reading about it, in a way, of a place called Nepenthe, which is on the cliffs above Big Sur, kind of an artist enclave, and they have a wide variety of arts and crafts and wind chimes and things like that. Just, by the way, did he ever work on any wind chimes?
Not that we know of.
A lot of unique things there. What are your special exhibits or distinctive displays that you'd like to talk about?
Each year we do two separate competitions. Our first competition is for high school students creating prints in honor of Wharton's initial start in woodcut printmaking. We call that program Imprint, and it's open to high school students in Chester, Delaware, Bucks, and Montgomery County. So it is a juried show, and we exhibit the finalists each spring. Our second competition is an annual woodworking competition that we've been doing, I believe, for about 24 years now. That is a competition whose theme changes every year. It often ends up being a national and international exhibit when we showcase the finalists from that competition in the fall every year. So if you were to come for the next 3 days that were still open for the year, you would see the finalists from this year's woodworking competition.
Fascinating. Do you have any visiting artists, scholars, or lecturers during the year?
That's an area, Gene, that we're looking to expand. One of the limitations that we face as an organization is space. We've described the building to you as it's small and it's chock full of art. So we have not had, typically in the past, a place to host lectures, although there's a great deal of interest. We have a number of Escherich scholars right in our community. Something interesting that has changed for us over the last couple of years is we repurchased the home on Valley Forge Mountain that Escherich originally lived in before he constructed the studio.
Oh.
It's an 1836 farmhouse right at the bottom of the hill. It's very close to the museum, but it's the bottom of a steep grade. And we're doing some strategic planning and fundraising now around how to utilize this building so that we can introduce new ways to interpret Escherich's life. We can introduce visiting artists in residence, scholars in residence, and have lecture series and other public programs. Another thing that's going to be changing for us and allowing us the gift of space is on the property here. One of the buildings that's not currently open to the public is Escherich's furniture workshop that he constructed in 1956. And this building was co-designed by Louis Kahn. So there's a great deal of interest in this building. It's a pretty singular example, certainly of Kahn's work, and the way the two men's styles came together, also Escherich. It's an incredible, incredible building. It has been the private residence of the museum co-founder since 1970, and that would be, again, his daughter Ruth and her husband, Bob, the son-in-law. Ruth passed away in October of 2015, and Bob still lives in that structure. He's just had his 94th birthday.
Oh, my Lord.
Yep, he's on our board. I talk to him just about every day, Laura and I do.
Oh, that's great.
And eventually, though, when Bob is passed on, that building will be part of the museum experience. And while I don't want Bob to go anywhere, I am very excited to showcase that building because it's incredibly unique and beautiful. And it also will give us space to do things like have scholars and lecturers visit the site.
Oh, that's excellent. Just curious, do you ever hear from collectors from 30, 40, 50 years ago who say, you know, I bought this piece and, you know, here it is and I think it's wonderful? I mean, do you get much feedback from people who actually own his works?
All the time. Yeah, we do. And there's a lot of new collectors as well. So they're coming to check out his work. I talked to a young gentleman this summer who had just purchased his first Escherich piece. It was a salad bowl and salad mixers, and he was ecstatic to be able to own it.
Oh, that's great. Your website is whartonescherichmuseum.org, and tell people, our listeners, what they can expect to find there on the website.
Well, hopefully in the not-too-near future, visitors can expect to find a fancier new website, because we are looking to upgrade. Our website's a little on the older side, but it's serviceable for now, and what you can find there, you can look at past imprint competition photos.
Mm-hmm.
You can actually take a virtual tour of the studio. It's pretty great. We are looking to upgrade that as well, but for now, it's a pretty neat way to get a sense of what you would see here. And also some general information about us, our museum store, our visiting hours. Our museum store, by the way, has publications, and we do some restrikes of Escherich's woodblock prints.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
What is the best time to visit, and what is your schedule during the year?
So we are actually getting ready to close down. Every year we close January and February.
Mm-hmm.
Being up here on the mountain in the wintertime, the decision was made some time ago that it just was best to not be open January and February because of snow and inclement weather.
Mm-hmm.
We will reopen the first weekend in March, and then we're open Tuesday through Sunday. All of the visits are by advance reservation, and people can learn more about that on our website or by giving us a call.
Excellent. Well, Laura and Julie, thank you so much for being with us on the show today. That was fascinating. Be sure to tune in next week on Wednesday, January 4th at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, when we'll be in a new segment with local Kennett Square artist Lila Gaylor of the Gaylor Winery, talking about art and art history. Thank you all for tuning in today to Living History.